morning, everybody, to the June Tech CEO session here all across Ontario. Just obviously want to thank everybody for attending this morning. And this is our last, well, it could be our last session for the next couple of months, unless you guys want to reconvene in July. Obviously want to start off by thanking Barry Fairhurst for facilitating this year. So thank you, Barry, for your leadership and guidance this year. I also want to thank BDC for the continued sponsorship of our TechCEO peer group. And so I wanted to introduce Marc-Andre Mayhew. He's our kind of the new GTA Tech lead. He is taking over for John Linteris, I think his name is. So we have a new primary contact as long also with Trevor and Larry Dong of BDC. So and Mark will be speaking a little bit later in our conversation today. And also want to thank John Cameron for helping out with everything with the TechCEO peer group. And with that, I'm going to open up the floor. It's your turn, Barry. So I guess the first thing we had on our docket is how's everybody doing? I think we're in stage one of opening and just want to open it up to see how people are doing. How has the start or the end of May, the start of June looked for everybody? How's business going? So Barry, you can take it away if you wish.
Yeah. To leverage off what Ryan just said there, both the Chamber of Commerce and the CFIB have mentioned, they know we go on summer hiatus, but they said if there's something that comes up during the summertime that's released by the government, and we want to have another video session online, they're more than happy to join in with us and to pass along their experience with it or their direction. So keep that in mind if somebody sees something. Being that we're so virtual, we don't necessarily have to take the summer off, but if everything's evolving as it is, personally, F2, we haven't seen much change to speak of. We deal with the government. The biggest change is everybody's having to deal virtually, I guess, and remotely. So a lot of the meetings that were taking place, it's just taking a little bit longer. I don't know, John Kitchen, if you found the same thing. You got a bigger outfit, obviously, than we do, but how are meetings being handled? And as Ryan said, open up to the floor. Anybody has, some challenges they're facing or some wins, which would be great to hear. Let's just open up to the floor and we'll start there.
We'll start picking on people here.
Yeah, we're gonna raise your hand for you.
I'm gonna. I love hearing from Mark Keynes. Mark, if you want to unmute for a second, I'd love to hear what's going on with you guys right now.
Sure. So I mean, we've actually been very fortunate in terms of we were able to, like I guess most companies in this group, move to working from home very efficiently and very quickly with all the collaboration tools already in place. Some of our customers got badly hit. We've only lost one so far, which is good. And the good news, I suppose, for us is our revenue didn't dip low enough to qualify for the wage subsidy, which is a good thing. And it's actually on the rebound already, which is another positive sort of thing. Sales pipeline's a little slow, but I mean, that's to be expected in these uncertain times. But the good news is that we've actually been able to help a lot of our customers turn things around and even come up with strategies where, for example, a customer who distributes exclusively to hair salons, obviously they were all closed, so they were shipping zero shipments. We came up with a drop ship directly to the salon's customers program. About 60% of their salons jumped onto it, and they actually were able to get up to about 40% activity by shipping directly to residences on behalf of local salons, which actually kept the salons sort of at least having some revenue. So that was pretty cool. And then as far as moving, sort of coming back to the office is concerned, we're really kind of in a holding pattern. We're in a wait and see. Not 100% sure that we want to start bringing people back to the office yet. Full disclosure, I'm sitting in my office at the moment because I eventually figured out I can't work at home. It's just not productive. And if I'm the only person in the entire building, which I am, then I'm probably not putting anybody at risk. So that's really a summary of where we're at Blue Link.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Who else? You know what? I love Chris. Chris Jebel. Mr. Memofix. How are things with you? Is Chris there?
Yeah, sorry, just had to unmute myself. Well, we were deemed essential service through the whole thing. But we've probably seen our business drop off in the neighborhood of 50 to 60%, depending on who the customer is. If I look at people that are in our specific sector, they're all seeing basically the exact same thing. People are talking about, the model through which you deliver the service has to change. Thing is the pre-COVID, what everybody was talking about was, okay, how could you apply more technology basically to automate digital transformation, all that sort of good stuff. Coming out of it, people are talking the exact same thing. I just think that they have reprioritized the objectives of why they're doing it. And we're just sort of taking it day by day. Overall, I would say life's a little bit dreary because it's very hard to engage in discussions about new business because you can't, ours is a business. It's a show and tell business. People really have to see what it is. So it's hard that way, but as they say, it is what it is. And, we're moving forward.
All right, cool. Thanks a lot. Graham, you had something to say?
Yeah, mate. I just thought not so much about business performance, more around in the last 3 months, obviously, as our business, we've been going for 2.5 years and we've been running really hard in those 2.5 years. And yes, we started with a plan and all that good stuff, but really this last couple of months has given us, me particularly, an opportunity to take a step back and get far more strategic in relation to working on the business, not working in the business. And what that's meant is that now we've done a couple of sessions with the team. My brother still obviously is doing the payments and all that compliance work. But now the rest of our group, obviously with Darren on board, we're much more clearer in relation to where we're going, what we need to do with our client experience. And although revenue has been up and down because of volatility, it allows, Rice FX now, we're really clear on where we need to be by the end of the year. Obviously, we've got a 3-year plan and we've completely taken the last 2.5 years' experience to be able to put in place that strategy moving forward. So that's been a really good win for our business.
Excellent.
Mark P, what are you seeing on the commercial side? I mean, you hear Shopify, what they're doing. What are you seeing?
Yeah, thanks, Brad. I was just going to comment. So I'm in the commercial real estate world, and I think it's a really good benchmark for what's going on. So from the business side, business has, basically stopped. There are a few transactions that are going on, but people are on hold. And that's what I'm recommending clients do, because we don't know where it's going. A lot of very busy helping tenants with negotiating with landlords on rent deferrals or deductions. I don't know how these deferrals are going to work, because it's not like someone's going to be making 4 more widgets when they come out of that. So that's going to be very interesting. But, just in the last month, the sublets in Toronto have gone up over 100%. People are paused and waiting. I've done a few deals, but those are essential services or charities or people that haven't been affected by COVID. I don't like to see clients go out of business or downsize, but I think landlords are going to be struggling because you have two things. You have people that have downsized or gone out of business, and you have, Bank of Montreal, Shopify, OpenText, all these companies are saying, hey, our guys can work at home now. So what's going to happen to all that space? And I like working in a tenant's market. I haven't seen a tenant's market in the last 7 years. I have clients that I did deals in 2008 that paid $6 net effective. And then last year, the landlord wanted $39. So that's just where the market's gone. And In the last year specifically, landlords have said, take it or leave it because we have five other people waiting. And that's going to change. So the silver lining for me is that we're going to be able to negotiate. There are going to be good deals out there. I just don't know how big that vacancy number is going to be for the landlords.
Yeah, my brother's fairly senior with Bell Canada in purchasing, and he's told his he's told all his folks to stay home till September, and it's TBD until September. Just, you know, don't think one way or the other, but he's surprised how efficient they've been, even though they've been remote. It's because
Just on that, a lot of they keep pushing it off. Go ahead, Patrick.
Just on that point, maybe just an open question. Like, I've been pleasantly surprised at our company how well everybody working from home has worked. But I think in part, and this is partly by my own past experience, it's worked because everybody's at home. No two people are in the same place. And so I'm almost worried about the when the day comes, and we've been just telling people to stay home too, even though we could go to the office, is when you get two or three people in the office on working on something, but one or two are home, the two or three people that are together, they're going to connect and be like, oh yeah, we should call Barry, right? And they're like, you know what, let's just call him later, right?
He's on the golf course.
And they're you know, they're like, those people then definitely feel isolated, left out. You know, it's kind of one of those, like, I don't know how to, because we're going to end up with a situation where some people want to go to the office, but other people are going to be like, no, I got to be home. My kids are home, my, you know, elder care, or you name it. Right. And we're not going to force people to come back. Right. And personally, I prefer everybody stays home because it avoids this problem, but I'm curious as how other companies are planning to handle that or have handled that in the past.
Maybe Mr. I Kitchen? Can answer some of this. Because as a firm, SBLR, we're a mid-sized accounting firm, and we have people who have been working at the office, and we have had most of the people working from home. So we find that it hasn't caused any disruption within the working environment, and most of the people, all the people, are working together well. Everybody gets on the video calls. We have a lot of you know, calls to, certainly at the beginning, maybe less now, but to make sure that all the teams are working together well, and it's been really very, very easy. And we're going to start with people coming back probably in June a little bit more, but we'll only go back to 30-40% of capacity, and the rest of the people will work from home. We're allowing them to do that. I feel that the amount of commercial rent, though, is going to fall off in offices, because offices have been working really, really well. I mean, as an accountant, I have seen probably 80% of my clients over the last 3 months on video calls, because it's tax season and they've had to have get their tax returns done. And I have a lot of people in downtown law offices and such like who, you know, they've been closed and everything's going well. In fact, their business is up, they're doing well, maybe the cash flow's down, but, and there is more of a concern of cash flow in the latter part of the year. I think a lot of businesses are gonna, you know, have issues with cash flow in the latter part of the year, but it's been fine.
So John Kitchen, you... that would allow people just to like two people are gathering, hey, you know, let's I'll pick on Barry, let's get Barry on the phone, and you're just instantly calling with a video call?
Yeah, exactly that. We're actually using Microsoft Teams, and Microsoft Teams is very collaborative, and we've now switched our phone system is in the process of being migrated to Microsoft Teams as well. So it's completely integrated, which makes it very, very easy. So you don't think about having to make a Zoom call or using some other kind of platform to do it. You know, are the other people set up properly? Are they at home? By using an integrated system, it works exceedingly well.
Yeah, we're finding we use Teams as well, and it's kind of like a combination of what we're on right now and Skype. I mean, it's quite brilliant. John Kitchen, you had a comment?
Yeah, just some observations. One of them is that generally, and certainly our organization mirrors this, productivity, organizations are finding if everybody's working remotely, Ironically, productivity has actually gone up. And a study I saw was about 15% improved in productivity. Now, there's a variety of reasons for that. One of them is you got nothing else to do. And so you inevitably go by your workstation, which is at home, and you do things. And I know we do things more on the evenings and weekends, et cetera, than they otherwise would. And I've got a fairly large staff. We're talking about 400 plus people. The second observation is that I think life is going to change from an office environment forever, but people do miss that camaraderie. They miss that getting together. And so the positive is a productivity gain. I think the negative is they miss that interaction, that social isolation. They don't like that. And I think collaborating is a lot more challenging. Three observations from our organization. We're lucky because we have about 75% recurring revenue. And we've actually pivoted to doing an awful lot with COVID-19. The Johns Hopkins dashboard that a lot of you are familiar with actually is based on Esri technology. So we've had this explosion of customers, and we actually gave them free software to build their own COVID-19 sites across Canada. And that's worked out fairly well. On going back to the office, I would suggest to you offices, and Mark can appreciate this, are never going to be the same in the short term. Landlords are trying to figure out, we lease 16 offices across the country, and every single one has different rules. And even what happens with an office is actually going to change very dramatically. I'm not sure, John, if you've got that PowerPoint, but we're actually pivoting and helping customers figure out how they go back to the office. And we're using indoor mapping. So we do mapping externally, but we also do indoor mapping. And we actually can track people indoors. And so we're doing spatial analysis to actually show people the challenges they're going to have to go back to work. And Howard, you mentioned about going to about 40% capacity. Well, you can see here, this is a customer site. And what this is we're building dashboards. And you can see if you want to keep a distance between people, and if you take that 2-meter buffer on either side of a person, you can see how they are now banging into each other. And it's going to be problematic. So looking at this chart here, if somebody just pushes, they don't even have to push their chair back, and you can see how they're going to interfere with each other. So we're actually doing space planning, and we also have a product. This is an out-of-the-box product for scheduling, where they can actually schedule, and you can also see it says personal versus shared. Personal is somebody with a door, so you can actually close the door, and therefore you've got a barrier. But there's all sorts of issues with HVACs and with shared areas like meeting rooms, etc. So the offices in the short term will not be the same. You will have trouble even going back. If you're in a traditional office with cubicles, etc., of a normal size, you'll have trouble going back to 50% capacity. I would suggest to you the vast majority are going to be much lower than that. So that's going to change. The other thing is, as Lan knows, we deal a lot with cities. Yeah. And cities are changing fairly dramatic. There's been a lot of pressure on cities to across mm-hmm. the country to put bike lanes in. Obviously, transit's problematic of having everybody jammed up into subways or buses during busy times of rush hour. I would suggest to you that's going to change. And I think an awful lot of people are going to work in a hybrid environment. The only other conclusion I have is we talked about governments. Governments have struggled. I would suggest to you private sector organizations have pivoted much easier than governments. Governments have had really poor networks and virtual private networks, so particularly the federal government. They struggled immensely when they first started this. So there's going to be a lot of pressure for governments to get back into their offices because they can't do things digitally. They're struggling that way. So there's going to be pressure on different organizations to get back. But you know, a lot of industries are not going to be the same as a result of it. And so we're just trying to pivot and look for opportunities within it. And I think from a tech standpoint, it's the other thing it's really showing is the data side of things is really poorly organized across governments. And so you saw in Ontario, the previous minister, Phil Potts, actually being appointed by Rob Ford to look at all data transfer, et cetera. So anything with healthcare, I would suggest healthcare is going to go upside down. So I think that'll be an opportunity on the tech side. They're coming into the finally into the digital age. Anybody who's working with the justice system, they're finally using video and other things. So again, I think anything with government, with digital transformation, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities to up their game because they've really suffered much more, I would suggest, than the commercial market has.
Yeah, I just wanted to add about the criminal justice system. I have a few criminal lawyers who are clients, and I would say that has been has not worked very well yet. The video systems don't work. No. My son, who's a criminal lawyer as well, is doing bail court virtually for duty counsel, and it's all being done over the phone. So you're representing clients and that you don't know, because when you're doing duty counsel, it's one client after another that comes through the system. You're having to try to argue for release on bail, and everything is being handled over a phone call. Very, very difficult.
So yeah, a lot of room for improvement, like you say, Howard. Exactly. Yeah, it's been a real wake-up call for them. And I think it's a wake-up call also for government organizations. I think some of them have really struggled. And I think, again, I think there's going to be a big opportunity on that for different people, again, in various sectors.
Yeah, we just, to go along with that, John, we were just fortunate. We just won a contract with the Canadian government. It's all around AI for image processing and recognition. It's all to do with the justice system. It's all to do with court dates. It's all to do with, I won't get into all the gory details, but we have three/four, because the fourth hasn't germinated into a decision yet or to an RFP process. But of the, say, 3/4, this is the only one that actually hasn't been stalled because they're viewing it as a priority. Everything else is, with all the money that's going out into the coffers of the public, they're saying, well, we have to, you know, look at our budgets. So a lot of department revenue, a lot of department budgets are being pulled back other than the, you know, the budgets to keep status quo. But new special projects or advanced projects or even the CRA of working on their systems to make them more efficient, so on and so forth. Everything's pretty much been said, you know, they want a 90-day hold to make any kind of forward movement. Now, in your space, obviously, it's very different, but this is...
I think if you can have... If you can have something related to COVID-19, I think this will get fast-tracked. It reminds me of years ago, when Canada was fighting in Afghanistan and, you know, we were trying to do procurements through the federal government, didn't matter what it was, if you could use the word Afghanistan somewhere in your proposal, it got fast-tracked. So somehow, if you can relate to an organization that is going to help them in the next 12 months vis-a-vis COVID-19, I think you'll have an advantage, because otherwise, you're right, Barry, everything's going to get delayed and everything's, I think, going to get budget, as well as a lot more eyes on every decision of any spending.
But when it's approved, like we were told it maybe months before a decision came down, and it went through lightning fast, to the point that we were just notified last Friday They're already looking for a final statement of work. They wanted it today. I said, we can't do that because of the details that is required. So they're saying, well, can we have it Wednesday? Well, we've done quite a bit of work with the government, as you have. We've never seen an SOW turn, you know, want to be turned around in, you know, 4 or 5 days. It's just, especially in the world of AI, where you're dealing with so many variables and, you know, there's 300 points of entry across the country. It's all the border patrol and that type of thing. And how do you deal with 300? How do you deal with acquiring images and data from 300 points across our country and write up a statement of work to do that, recognizing we're dealing with, especially in the video space, all the way all back to VHS up to the current formats. Wow. I'm getting into too many details, but that's how quickly they want us to move forward. And we're sitting back saying, listen, guys, you know, we can take some time now and it won't be problematic down the road, or we can give you just something you can throw at the wall and we're going to have issues later. And of course, my biggest concern is all the out of scope stuff that comes through, you know, plan A. But David, what are you seeing? I mean, I know you're kind of international. What are you seeing at your end?
First of all, regarding work at office, I mean, we've required our customers to use Slack or Skype for 10 years now, and we use Skype internally, Slack internally. So we've had no issue working from home, no at all. Actually, I don't want to go back to the office and so forth. I'm quite happy working at home here. Productivity is just fine. What we've done for a lot of our project managers is one day a week they come to the office. They're our most senior people, and we'll probably do that, you know, maybe intermediate people 2 days a week, junior people 3 days a week. But I don't think we're ever going to go back to 5 days a week anymore. I don't think it makes any sense. In terms of business, again, we do e-commerce. Certain industries are really, really suffering. The promotional products industry is incredibly suffering. I mean, they're all about giving months and t-shirts at trade shows and events. There are no trade shows. There are no events. So they're having a bad time and so forth. Luxury fashion is down badly and so forth. But B2C is booming. We've got customers that have doubled or tripled their sales, basically. So we're busy, which is great, because we have a subset of customers that are doing extremely well. But I've never seen so many leads come in. We're getting really good, solid leads every couple of days, basically, from all around the world, basically, as customers are looking to create marketplaces or do e-commerce or so forth. And we focus on the marketplace space, which is a harder niche of e-commerce. So we're getting a lot all over the place, especially for the Middle East right now. We've got a good niche over there as well. So globally, you know, things are pretty good in e-commerce space. Everybody's doing more, but it depends on your industry. B2C, yes. B2B, less so, and so forth. Anything targeting small businesses. Small businesses are broke and have no money, basically. So that's another place. But yeah. So we're going to get through this without a problem. Things look pretty good. But I'd hate to be somebody in another niche like a restaurant owner or something like that, or in a tourism business, or selling luxury goods. I mean, they're all suffering big time. So that's pretty much us.
That's a great segue into Marc-Andre. Welcome for your first meeting with us. What's the BDC? What are you hearing? What are they telling you to?
The first thing that I can say that is, you were talking about the federal government. So we like to think ourselves as being separate, because overnight BDC was operational from working from home. So everyone had the tools. Our systems were solid enough to handle all the 2,500 employees at home. And we actually went through two of our, you know, biggest months ever, all working from home. So productivity was skyrocketing. So I can start by introducing myself. I've been with BDC a couple of years, and with the tech team in Ontario, we're seeing a lot of growth. And so John Linceris, as you said, Ryan, is still on board. But we're splitting Ontario in two regions in order to be able to service it better. And we're going to be adding account managers over the next couple of months. So it just made sense to have more leads in place. So it's a pleasure to get to know each other. I'm actually in Toronto. And so we'll be covering the Toronto GTA area. So I'll be present in events, present in the market. That's really your goal. You know, it's very unequal across the country, BDC's penetration rate in the tech ecosystem. So, you know, there's some regions where we have 15 to 20% of tech businesses into our portfolio. Almost one in five, you know, tech businesses client of BDC. And it's not the case in Ontario. So we want to be sure that, you know, all the tools are there so that these businesses can grow and become the most competitive. And maybe I could give a little insight into how things are going at BDC. You know, we were the ones that got a bulk of federal funds, not all administered through BDC. Some of it is through guarantees of the chartered banks. So, you know, we had the working capital loans up to $2 million at a subsidized rate. These loans are actually, you know, going well. I think it's over $3 billion that we took out from that program. There's the BCAP lending. So through other chartered banks where BDC is guaranteeing, it's actually been up to a slow start. And right now what we're actually seeing is that, you know, part of the reason why it's slow is that clients were at the beginning of the crisis expecting, you know, huge drop in sales, you know, going to 5, 10, 15% of, you know, previous sales levels. And clients are calling back saying it's not as bad as we thought it would be. So they were, you know, they had a more negative outcomes for the future. So, you know, a lot of clients right now are in a wait and see mode. You know, they don't want to take additional debt, which is totally understandable at this point. So they want to see how things are panning out, how, you know, markets are reopening and, you know, businesses are shifting their expenses to adapt to this new reality. You know, what we're also seeing is that, you know, this huge working capital phase at the beginning is now being, you know, treated. And we're actually seeing a lot of clients approaching us for growth opportunities. So either it's their business, they see new opportunities, but they also see, you know, consolidation opportunities, acquisition. So market values are lower. And so we're seeing a few mergers and acquisition deals coming to us as opportunities. So it's a good prospect. You know, BDC, for us internally, we're seeing it as a fiscal year split in two. The first 6 months is a COVID response, but we're, you know, getting in gear for the second half of the year, which will be more axed towards, you know, growth opportunities, being more proactive and getting ready to help these businesses grow and not just survive at this point. I think there was a question for me.
Yeah, Prasad, go ahead. You can speak up. Yes.
Hey, hey guys. Marc-André, nice to meet you. It's terrific. Nice. I'm really looking forward to, you know, getting to know you better, only because I think, you know, the BDC has a huge opportunity for a great number of businesses, including ours. You know, I've learned from you some of the challenges that you're seeing with regards to growth companies. You know, you talked about growth companies just now, and you know, we're a company that's in growth phase, where we've been plowing every ounce of any level of profitability back into the company. So, you know, if you look at our balance sheet and our P&L, there's no level of profitability, but, you know, we've been taking loans, we've been taking opportunities, we've been taking on debt to keep up with what we need to do with COVID. But where does BDC fit into this? Because, you know, there's many a number of times when we've dealt with different levels and different people at BDC that basically say, well, you know, you need to be a little bit more profitable, or you need to be having a little bit more cash in your bank. And, you know, and then it comes back down, well, you know, part of my thinking around what BDC is, you know, when there's tons of commercials in the on TV right now that basically say, hey, you know what, we're the, you know, small business bank. Well, part of that small business bank, the way I view what BDC should be doing is, you know, recognizing that there are companies that are cash flow positive and profitability positive, but there are also those companies that are in their growth phase that require that kind of support that BDC offers. And I'd love to learn from you as to, you know, how do you position these companies?
Yeah. So, you know, and this is very traditional. Traditionally, a bank would not look at these companies that are not profitable. And that's why the tech group at BDC was established. So, you know, we understand that, you know, with all the development costs that you have, the markets that you need to build, you know, a lot of companies are focusing on the top line, you know, item of your P&L. So, you know, we understand that there can be losses. And so what we need to do is really do a deep dive analysis of the reasons why. And that's where the cash flow is going to be king here. So we need to make sure that our debt is not actually like putting a strangling you. It's actually going to help you reach, you know, either a second round of equity, or it's going to allow you to reach, you know, break even point where, because let's not forget it. It is debt. So debt needs to be repaid. There's a monthly repayment structure. So we need to make sure that whatever proposal we make, it's going to help the company not, you know, dig its grave. So at that point, it's really going to be key to identify what is their cash position at that point in time. If we add on debt, it's going to allow the company to reach that, you know, point in time where it's going to be, you know, break even or at a second stage. So
Mark Andre, this is Rakesh Tikiu. I'm Prasad's colleague, actually. It's interesting that you say that the BDC, you know, will step in when traditional banks won't. We have been refused three times by BDC. Traditional banks have come to bat three times for us. And the reasons we're given change every time. There is no consistency. When I speak to senior members within the organization, they say, we completely appreciate what you're doing. We love what we're doing. We need to finance companies like yours. You know, we're opposing growth in this COVID space. We're innovating. We're selling pieces of our business, buying businesses. We're doing some really amazing things, and BDC is not coming to bat. So what's the point of BDC then?
Well, you need to differentiate two things. So there's the part where, you know, we finance the growth and support the companies. The COVID loans were given out for funds by the federal government with very strict criteria. So one of the criteria was, you know, at profitability or higher prior to the crisis. So that's where, you know, we were a bit, you know, in between two chairs at that point in time. Now what we look at, I didn't see those companies. I didn't see those, you know, cash flow and those balance sheets. And, you know, it would be interesting to see them, because we did some great deals in the past where these companies were losing money. You know, just to give you a bit of background, I used to be in the Montreal team. And accounts that we handled were Good Food, were Lightspeed, were companies that, you know, grew tremendously, are still not profitable today. And we were able to help them. So we need to find that sweet spot. It is very surprising to me that you're saying that chartered banks have stepped in when BDC couldn't, because usually we step in way earlier than chartered banks would. So, you know, for these cases, my contact information will be provided, and it will be my pleasure to look at these files and to make sure that we did whatever we can, or that if we're not able to, we explain why and what needs to be attained in order to be able to step in. And let's not forget also that, you know, over time we evolve very rapidly. BDC has developed tech solutions, so a SaaS financing tool. You know, we have different solutions that cater to different types of companies. We want to make sure that, you know, we find the right structure for the right companies. So, and every, you know, we're still working on other solutions. You know, I know one thing that, you know, is a big stop for a lot of companies is personal guarantees. And we are working on, you know, solutions to go around these personal guarantees. But there's a lot of stakeholders at you know, here. You know, we have a chief risk officer. We have a mandate to the government to stay, you know, profitable over time. So, you know, we need to navigate into that whole system and make sure that we're, you know, supporting the right companies, but supporting the most companies as well.
All right. Appreciate the offer, Prasad. I'm sure Prasad's already sent you an email. So
I was going to say, be ready, Mark Andre. You're going to get inundated, not just by our company, but I think there's a lot of companies out there that are looking for
And I'm looking forward to it. That is why I'm here. That's why we're adding additional support for the tech ecosystem in Ontario.
Thank you so much. I will, Mark, it's Ryan. I will send out your contact information because I know there's a few other companies like BizRing, and I know that Maureen Campbell from Flashlight Benefits. There's a lot of people who are interested in BDC and have applied to BDC, but I think have not seen the results. So I will provide your information. And sorry, you will likely be inundated, but it's for a good reason.
That is fine. That is what I'm here for.
Okay. I've had some problems with clients trying to get funding from BDC where their accounting, when we're accounting for clients that are building their own IP, either for resale or for internal purposes, accounting treatment is to expense all the costs they incur with regarding that IP, because there is no surety that the value will be there and how much that value will be, especially when they're in the process of building, which can often take more than a year to, and they might be continuing building IP every year. So they're always running at a loss. They always have deficits and they always have huge problems trying to get it funded. And even when I speak with the credit department of BDC, and I have to try to explain that to them every time. Why do I have to try to explain development of IP that will always result in a deficit in the company year over year over year?
Well, the answer is really easy. I also have that issue and I keep explaining the same thing because obviously, you know, the tech ecosystem is very particular, the tech structure of deals. So, you know, one thing that we are working on is making sure that we have the back office that knows tech as well. So tech authorizers for loans, tech underwriters for loans. So the credit department that knows what, you know, how to treat these particularities of tech businesses. That being said, for your particular case, you know, we need to make sure, and it depends which tool we're using, because as you know, BDC does, you know, equity, does, you know, does growth and transition capital, so more flexible terms like mezzanine financing, and we do debt. So we need to find out which is the best solution once again. And if it's debt, well, that's where we come in a phase where, you know, we need to make sure that there's going to be an ability to repay that debt. So that's where a loss on the financial statements, it needs to be supported by, you know, contracts. It needs to be supported by, you know, strong forecasts that are reasonable. So, you know, every case is different. I don't want to get into specifics here, but, you know, these are conversations, yes, we need to have over and over again, because there's education to do on our part. But there's also, you know, a file and a business case to build around each of these companies that are losing money. Because, you know, at the end of the day, as I said, putting on debt onto a company that is, you know, not certain of going through a crisis or going through, you know, the risky phase, where maybe equity is the right solution. So we need to have that conversation at that
point. Mark, can I make a couple comments, please? We're a BDC customer, and we've been trying with our bank to go through either the BDC BCAP program or the EDC program, and both are 80% guaranteed by the government. Our banker has advised us not to bother with BDC. They said that EDC is 2.54%, BDC is 5%. Why do you want to go with BDC? So we're in the process right now of going through the EDC application, and we've met their first criteria and so forth. I reached out to my BDC account rep and I said, what's the problem here? It's 80% guaranteed. We're already a customer. Things are looking great. And finally, we got information and said, oh, you got programmers in Ukraine. Ukraine's on some moratorium. We can't do business with you. And I said, but the federal government has said the limitations Ukraine, Crimea, not Ukraine, and so forth. And we've heard nothing back. So I'm really disappointed with BDC in terms of response and excuses like this, basically. But even our banker has said, don't bother with BDC and so forth. So I don't know.
Mark, I'll offer an observation. This may come across as a challenge, but it's not intended. I'm hoping that it kind of sheds some light from my experience, is that BDC is not government, like it's a government organization, but it's not charity, right? They are a for-profit organization, right? And so they're not going to lend companies money when they can't afford to pay it back. They're not going to invest in companies when it doesn't make sense. I don't mean anybody here or any of the feedback. I just mean in general, right? Where I have found that they work well is when other people are in. They will partner up with other investors. They will partner up with other debt lenders, right? Or like most debt vehicles, if we're talking debt, right, it works and BDC will be there when you don't need it, right? And it took me a long time to kind of get over that, get my head around this, because if by the time you need it, right, they're not going to make an interest rate that makes that return worthwhile. But if they give you the money and get interest for 3 years, when you actually only were a risk for one of those years, they're effectively tripling their interest rate return, right? And it took me a long time to kind of get my head around this concept of growth debt and why when you first raise money, you get all kinds of calls from debt providers. I'm like, I just raised money. Why would I take on debt, right? It's like, because you don't need it now, right?
Exactly.
I don't know if that helps, but that's kind of the way I kind of level set expectations around BDC. Having said that, they will step in, like when the big banks won't, BDC is there, right? But it's usually in partnership with other providers of debt or equity.
Yeah, I mean, so we're always complementary to other banks. You know, we don't do short-term lending. We don't do bank accounts. So you need to have that partner around the table. And, you know, especially during this COVID crisis, one of the main criteria for us was, how is your relationship with your bank? How, you know, what are they doing for you right now? And they need to be stepping up in order for us to step up as well. And just a word on David, your situation is that over the past 2 months, we've had as much volume as we would in 3 years. So, you know, it's thousands of requests that came in where, you know, we don't have the same capacity as chartered banks do. So account managers were overwhelmed with requests. So what I would say is, you know, it sounds to me like, you know, there's an explanation to get there. There's, you know, work around to do. So once again, I want to look into it because these cases, you know, should not happen. So, and we understand that at this point, it might not have been, you know, treated fairly. So we just want to check it out.
Yeah, I've had a very different experience with BDC ourselves. And we couldn't get, I've been with a Royal Bank for 30 odd years personally and done some commercial stuff with them. And they wouldn't even look at us because we weren't in business for 2 years. BDC did come to the table. It was only a couple of hundred grand or something, but they're expensive. The money is no doubt about it. It's expensive. It's more, you can get cheaper money elsewhere, but when, you know, push comes to shove and you need it, you know, the higher rate is not necessarily the most expensive rate, but anyhow, it worked for us. They were very good. I have to say the account manager I had was phenomenal. We were able to tweak the business case that was supplied into the BDC. It was very good. He didn't really want to put any kind of contracts, outstanding contracts we had. Some companies don't want to give the private information on our customers, and we did. And then when I spoke to the analysts, I guess, the auditors and final decision makers, when they called me, we discussed the business, we discussed the opportunities, and that's what gave us the green light, because they could see a path to revenue. They could see, even though we were still, you know, zero, we were still in the red, they could see a path to revenue. I don't know if every situation, I agree with Marc-André, may be different. One thing that fit for us is their portfolio. We happen to be in a low, basically a vacant sector within their risk portfolio. So that helped us. They were able to fill that square within their customer base. If we had been in a different sector perhaps, and they were already maxed out, we may have not have gotten it, because again, that changes their beta. So I guess work with Marc-André, folks, he seems to be more than willing to. My guy's in Durham here, so it's a different group. But I was referred to them from TechConnects, and it worked out very well for us. Tali, we only have a few minutes here, but I know you're on the whole lead generation, helping customers find customers. What are you seeing, and how are you helping people find customers when we're so remote, so distant from what we're used to doing?
So it's interestingly enough, in probably last, I would say months and a half, I had quite a few businesses reaching out to me asking about, in particular, about email marketing and automation campaigns. So either start, set up, or build ongoing channel. So it's quite interesting. I didn't see that high demand previously. And I'm sure you heard some people were saying before email dead, which is obviously not true. But recently I saw a spike in demand on email site in particular. And if you think really about this, businesses, when all the COVID situation happened, what channels businesses really had to communicate with their customers? It's only email. Mm-hmm. That's all you have. I mean, social media, it's all great if you're there, if you're not there, and the reach is not the reach, you know. So whoever didn't have the proper email platform set up prior, they had problem, right? And some people are actually reaching out saying, oh, okay, we have emails, but we have problem because emails either don't reach as customers or they getting it in spam folder. So that's the whole email deliverability issue. But I do clearly do see much high interest in this kind of space. And speaking about other customers, so, yeah, in e-commerce, I see e-commerce is booming. Everyone is trying, if they didn't have platform before, to get on e-commerce site. But obviously, it's not as simple and quick as 1, 2, 3. But people realize now more than ever that whatever they were postponing digital part before, they have to do it, right? Because business won't be going it used to be prior to COVID, obviously. Things will be different, right?
Is anybody hearing some restriction, some alleviation of the whole GDPR? John, you got your hand up, you're on mute.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on what Tali was saying. We do a lot of face-to-face meetings every year. We've got 16 user conferences across the country. A lot of leadership forums. We just felt face-to-face was our main contact. Well, we have been pleasantly surprised how popular, we've always done webinars, but the volume of webinars has gone way up. So we've invested a lot on a whole digital platform based on Salesforce and spent a lot of time and effort the last couple of years really cleaning it up and making sure we got a lot of contacts. And so it's starting to really pay dividends. And so an example is we have an international user conference in San Diego every year, and it's pretty big. It's about 16,000 people. We might get 600 Canadians down to it. Well, they're doing it virtually this year, and the target is 100,000 people coming onto it over a 3-day event. And from a Canadian perspective, we get 600 customers maybe down. It's a real hassle because they have to get approvals and it's international travel and everything. Well, aspirationally, we're trying to get 10,000 people out to it. So it's interesting how people have caught on to this digital marketing and this concept of I can get a lot of value coming onto a webcast or other digital platforms, or I pay more attention to my email leads now. It's I think there's a real pivot to this digital marketing and then subsequently digital sales. So about half of our sales now, all the small ones, everything's e-commerce. And so that's the other thing. I think there's more acceptance of this consumerization of IT, where B2B is way more accepting of doing things digitally through an e-commerce platform. If you have a really good marketplace store, et cetera, I think, again, the dollars we're seeing and what people are willing to do. So I think this is just accelerating where things have been going. It all comes back to contact, et cetera, by, again, a much more accepting of this idea of I'm going to go on virtually versus this whole idea of attending events. I think somebody else mentioned that earlier about this whole idea of people jumping on a plane for a meeting or jumping on a plane to an event, et cetera. That's all going to go out the door. And I think the genie's out of the bottle when it comes to how we market, how we sell. Again, we're pivoting so that we're doing a lot more demos and other things. And I think, again, I think the technology's proven itself, like we are proving it here today. So I think it's just going to speed up, and just everybody's got to make sure their business can take advantage of that, regardless what vertical you're in.
Yeah, we just, every year we have NAB in April, which is National Association of Broadcasters, was canceled this year. So a lot of the manufacturers did, 3 or 5 day virtual NABs. I agree with you. The last thing I want to do is hop on a flying Petri tube to go to Vegas, because I know I'm going to come back with something. Every year I come back with a cold. So, but it's, they're already talking about not even having it next year. This was a bit of a, these whole webinars and the virtual tours were thrown together at the last minute. And even though they were very, very well run, they're really putting some effort into formalizing it and making it much more interactive, because it was really just a one-way share of information. Now they're trying to make it a truly interactive scenario. So I agree with that.
And I think you're going to see best practices coming out about how do you do these things. And yeah. I think you're going to see just an evolution happening fairly quickly. And I think there's a big savings too. We're saving literally millions of dollars this year without these on-premise events and all the AV and everything that goes with it. Plus the productivity loss, again, to your point, Barry, of hopping on planes and just the expense, but also the productivity, the downtime. So I think, I think this is just going to accelerate. So the question is, how do you make your voice heard in this big channel of all these different kind of digital channels that are going to be out there? So I think it's incorporating video, it's incorporating webcasts, it's incorporating emails through drip campaigns, and so it's social media as well. I think social media again. So I think the whole marketing side on the digital side of things is just going to explode.
Mark P.
John, I just wanted to ask you, so I'm doing a lot more Zoom calls and getting into larger webinars. I find that the Zoom customer service is terrible, and we're looking at doing a large webinar across North America, and we're just researching this. I know there's Teams, but if you're getting over 5,000 people, do you have any experience on the platform, and is Zoom the right one, or is there something else?
Well, on Zoom, actually, you got to be awfully careful. They've had a lot of issues with security. In fact, we banned anybody using the free version of Zoom because there's a huge security holes. And so we use something called WebEx. The thing you need to do is on WebEx, for instance, there's one like this, it's a general meeting. Then they actually have a special thing called events. And on events, what happens is when you come in, everybody's automatically muted, there's no video. So what we try and do, to Barry's point, is we really try and make it interactive. And so we'll have a presenter, but then we have another person beside them who's monitoring everything. So we really encourage comments to come in as we present. And so I think you got to try and say, how can we make this interactive? And so what we'll do is we'll present a portion, and then we'll say, hey, there's some questions that have come. And the person who's monitoring is saying, hey, this is a question that probably others have as well. So what they do is they go and they say, gee, this is a question. What about this? Or what about that? So I think a couple things. One is you really want to make sure the thing can scale and that you've got the proper things in place with You really want excellent sound. So we actually have our own sound booth at our office, because that's how paranoid we are about these things, with special mics and everything. But sound is really, really, really important on a WebEx. The second thing is the video side. We generally would hide everybody else, but have a little postage stamp just in the corner of the person. And then the another thing is, of course, your bandwidth, because if you've got 5,000 people on, you've got to make sure they can do it. So some of the people like Tellab and that, they're now pivoting from doing live events to doing those things. They actually provide studios and everything to do it, Mark. So if you're doing 5,000, I would suggest you want to be in a studio. I think you want proper lighting is another thing, again, for that postage stamp. So you need bandwidth, so nothing breaks up, and you really want to monitor that Q&A and try and make it interactive. So those are the sorts of things we're doing to try and make it, you got to make it really professional, like you would live event to 5,000.
That's
great.
Side note that you can use a tool. It's called Mentimeter. I actually used it in my live presentations, but online it's as well very good. It's you can create questions, word cloud, and it's interactive. So people can go, they will get a code, they can go on their phone and just put their answers, and it will show up on your screen. And the best part at the end, if you put any offers, they can send you email. So they can basically submit a request if you, I don't know, free consultation or call or whatever you offer. So just a side note, it's called Mentimeter.
That's great. No, what we're doing is we're gonna set it up with a question and answer. So the two webinars, and I think there might be people here that'd be interested in it. So with Adam Oates, who you guys follow hockey, we're gonna do across North America with our partners. It's stick handle your way back into the office. And he is coaching 8 of the 10 superstars. So there's a lot of analogies between hockey and leadership. And then another one is, and John, you might be interested with the Center of Disease and Control. I've started a second business working with a few Tech Connect members also, Protect Your Office, but we're going to be talking about best practices and what they're doing in the US in terms of battling COVID and with some industry leaders. So those are two large webinars, and why they're so large is because our US partner is very large. So we're just trying to figure out, and the worst thing is if we got on Zoom and there was a security issue, but it's very, I've been on a couple large ones and they're great because you can email your questions. We'll have a moderator to ask, and it's very well organized. I just want to make sure that the technology works. And Zoom does make me a little bit nervous, but it seems to be the best platform for that webinar. So, but anyway, I'll keep you posted and maybe ask follow up with a couple more questions.
Hey, Mark, it's Ryan. Can you just elaborate? I know one of the questions I had brought up earlier that was in the email was, pivoting business and collaboration. Do you want to speak about a couple of the things that you're working on right now? Just because I know that it's very interesting for a lot of people. Obviously, the future of office space. Can you want to just kind of lament on some of the things you're working on right now with some of our members?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's really, really quick. So I mentioned I do commercial real estate, and I've been spending a lot of my time helping clients plan for re-entry into the office. But then I was looking at the furniture. So Herman Miller, Steelcase, Technion, they have these panels, but they're very expensive. It's like putting a spark plug in a Bentley. You have to pay to upgrade the furniture, and it doesn't work as well. So we really have three buckets of services. So we've teamed up with a real estate consultant. He's run real estate for Hydro One, IBM, McDonald's. So he's our consultant, and he's going to help people with how to get back into the office and plan in terms of best practices, signage, everything else. But then we have a manufacturing partner who we've already manufactured walls and screens are the big things, barriers. So making your furniture go higher. having walls behind you to separate. It's with a product called Trespa, which is the highest lab quality grade material. So it's antibacterial. You can wash it, you can whiteboard it. So that's the one. And then we do have Plexi, but Plexi is a North American on shortage. So there's that bucket. And then we have the PPE bucket. So sourcing different supplies. So we have a supplier of sanitizer. We're looking at wipes, but if someone needs masks, so we have a partner who's been buying for the medical industry for the last 30 years, and that's the Wild West. That changes every single day. And then working with partners like Infield, you know, a lot of people aren't going to have, I have one client that has five cafeterias. So how are you going to do that? So Food IQ, you can go in and have a COVID safe environment. So that's sort of, everything's under protect. So we have protectyouroffice.com, Protect Your Lease is a consultant, and Devoncore going in and giving free consulting how to get in. Protect Your Amenities is Infield Solutions. We have Protect Your Home, Protect Your Community. You know, we're doing lockers. So it's sort of a holistic area. So, but it's exciting. And that's why we're working with the Center of Disease and Control out of the US too, because they have, you know, some of the newest data and some of the trends in technology.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it's actually interesting. I read an article literally yesterday that was talking about all these changes we're making and what happens when there is a vaccine. One of our comments was, well, this will be good for just basic flu, keeping people healthier during work schedules, but all of a sudden they do come out with a vaccine. So there's companies actually, they're saying, you know what, they're gonna wait up to a year before they actually start making changes and have their people work remotely. I'm not sure what that's gonna be for the next pandemic, if, you know, whenever that is, but it's interesting that the companies are willing to go to that extent, because you're talking significant investment. I'm thinking back to the corporate days, I'm sure, for, you know, John Kitchen and John Cameron, when you ran, you know, larger corporations, to retrofit an entire office with new cubicles, you know, it's a serious investment. And how are companies?
It's extremely expensive, Barry. And a lot of companies are going to have the money, right? And that's the whole thing. So, you know, to spend $1,000 to upgrade a $2,500 or $3,000 cubicle, it's a lot of money, right? And that's what we're trying to do, is provide an alternative.
I guess Marc-André needs to open up the purse strings.
Yeah, I think, Barry, that I think you need to kind of do the Gretzky thing, you know, go where the puck's going to be. So the question is, are people, we've got people commuting an hour and a half to work. There's 3 hours out of their day. And so are we going to need them to, and here they are, you know, working remotely, and they're really productive. And in many cases, they're happy not to have that commute. So are you going to go back and have that same sort of approach with everybody comes to the office every single day? And I would suggest to you that day is past now. And so, so I think there'll be a lot more discussion of, gee, we need people in the office, but do we need them every day? And can they be productive when they're not in the office? And I think generally the consensus has been, you can figure out whether the work's getting done or not and deal with that accordingly. So things like hoteling, I think, will become far more popular. This idea that I don't have an assigned space, I have a variable space. I think certainly that's going to happen in the very short term because of the need to social distance at work. And it's really problematic. And I think it's a great area you're getting into, Mark, because it's a real challenge. We've looked at it for a couple of customers, and wow, you know, when you use a meeting room, who can use a meeting room? And they're basically saying one group gets to use that meeting room during the day, and that's it, or until it gets sanitized. And even sanitizing is a huge undertaking. There's also huge liability.
And John, I can talk to you. I'd like to talk to you offline about your tracking, because sensors is big in all sorts of ways.
Yeah, we've got a product called Indoors, and it will track everybody. We're also going to track visitors, because visitors, this came from SARS. So post-SARS, everybody tracked visitors a lot closer. That was the best practice. So everybody's going to have to track visitors to an office. And so you're going to have an RFID or some other kind of tag where you're going to have to track visitors. So the offices are going to change dramatically. So if I was in that position, I'd be doing a wait and see. I'd be really cautious about bringing staff back. And again, if somebody gets ill, or if somebody is a high probability, they've got low immunity, et cetera, well, they're at high risk. So, you know, is that a condition of employment that I have to come to that office? So that gets awfully tricky. So I think a lot of people are the wait and see, and I think you're going to see an awful lot of organizations go really slowly and conservative, because I think everybody's kind of figuring this out on the fly, but it's... I think it's going to change dramatically.
I agree. Maureen, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I can't echo I echo everything that's been said. I think dealing with the variety of clients I deal with while they're all in the tech space, the majority, I mean, I'm frightened by a couple of the organizations that I think they're going back at the end of June, but the majority have said, we're not going to be the leaders here. We're a 100-person company, or three, somebody else will show us the way and they'll figure it out. The cost is exorbitant. We'll eat the rent for a while and then let our lease go. But what I find, they kind of move past that. And the thing that they're going through, Barry, is actually they've really started to go for remote recruiting, like remote hires, not just remote workers in the GTA that commute an hour and a half. But I have several companies who are recruiting right now in Argentina, and those employees will sit forever in Argentina, or will sit forever in the Ukraine. So they're kind of moving past this logistics of the office space, and they're getting to the next stage is, okay, what do we need to do to truly be a global organization? Not that this is a temporary measure. And the big item is, do we have the management or the training within our management on how they're going to manage in this new world? Because they're going to manage and lead people very differently than if they could all get together and see each other in an office, etc. So the comment is coming up. Technical is not going to be king for my management team. People leadership, and it's going to be king. And sensitivity and emotional IQ and all of those things. And we've talked about good leaders and good managers have those, but it's really becoming a different world to think about who are your managers and are they going to be able to manage a team that will never, may never sit together, you know? So, you know, our HR peer group is going to be talking about what are you doing for managers, but at the next meeting next week, but I'm really, really interested for those organizations. It's the logistics scared them first. And then they just said, we're just not going to go back because we can't get down the logistics. We don't know what our risks are. Now they've gone to the next step of, okay, so this is our world. Now we can recruit from around the world. We can look at any talent we want. How do we shift to that? And then how are we going to manage this going forward? So I'd be interested if, you know, if any of you have commentary on sort of what you're doing for managers that I could take to the group next week, that would be very helpful. And the other thing I certainly want to let you know is about a really strong, I'll give it to Ryan. It's a really strong HR resource. It's a 4-hour seminar. And I know that's crazy, but I think it's videoed and the resource library is there from Williams HR Law. And they covered a ton of stuff around returning to work and things that you need to do from an HR law perspective. So I'll share that with Ryan, but I'm interested in comments on managers. How's that shifting?
Let me just add to what Maureen said. This happened to me literally extremely recently. I've had a couple of calls from recruiters asking me would I be interested in becoming a senior manager of companies. And I said, well, where are you located? One was in the UK, one was in California. And I said, I'm an old guy. I got tire marks on my face, right? So I'm not really a younger culture. They said, that doesn't matter. Their comment was, that doesn't matter anymore. It's not an office position. This will be 100% remote. So they were strictly looking for expert, you know, for knowledge as opposed to building this environment. I'll just throw that out there, and that has personally happened to me. Not interested because it's, you know, my own company, but for those that are thinking about the same thing, how do you recruit? Are you just going to be recruiting for culture? Like it's been recent, it's been important for the last few years, or are you recruiting or recruiting for experience and so on and so forth? So as Maureen asked, we'll open up. Comments, folks? Carol?
I just have a quick question because in our industry something is very surprising happen. For example, the big guys like Philip, they're hiring digital marketing. So all the big guys are heavily into digital marketing, and this marketing and the sales alignment become very, very important. But for us, we still needed to reach out to do the B2B sales calls. And I'm just wondering, is there any way, any better way to find the B2B sales leads? Because we have several channels to find those leads. So for example, trade shows, but I find it's not very, very efficient. And especially during this time, is not applicable. And also, I find some organization like Zoom Info, but most of the data are in US. Not they have data for Canadian market, but in terms of investment you put in, so it's not so ROI is not is not that good. So I'm just wondering for people in the B2B business, how do you guys outbound leads?
I can, if I can, Barry. I would suggest LinkedIn. It works great if it's done properly. It's called social selling.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking about paid advertisement on LinkedIn. I'm speaking about organic reach.
Okay, you mean LinkedIn?
LinkedIn, yeah. Okay. Yeah, if you're interested, we can chat in detail. I can explain what I'm talking about. I'm not sure it's very relevant for everyone here, but yeah, I would recommend LinkedIn.
Okay, thank you.
Callie, I've been using, Carol, I've been using LinkedIn as well, but I was going to talk just a little bit when people were talking about webinars. I've been on quite a few lately in the last 6 weeks that they have a networking session after. I don't know if anyone has experienced that, where after the 1 hour webinar, you're offered the chance to network. And basically you click on the network button and it circles around through the people that all agreed to network, and you get like speed dating, 3 minutes to talk with a person. The platform allows you to connect with them on LinkedIn through a button right on your screen while you're chatting with them, if you're interested. I spent a lot of time, obviously, trying to help people and they're trying to help me. It may not be direct links to my business, but I would suggest if you're going to try to run events, like John Kitchen, if you're trying to run events, covering off that networking, that connection part of a live event, it's a really nice add-on. And I was intimidated at first, you know, oh my God, I got to get ready for the video call. Who am I going to talk to? It's dead easy. And once you're doing it, I spend a half an hour after the webinar, I meet 4 people, we set up to try to help one another, and we move on. And I have the time right now, I can do it. But it's a way, Carol, if you and you're both on webinars, maybe see if ones that have the actual networking session after and partake in it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's John here. You make a really great comment there, Maureen. It's when we do an event, we'll always send out a live event, a face-to-face one. We always send out a pre-conference survey. And why do people come? Well, they want to learn about your product, services, etc. But number two is always networking. So you're right, that networking is why people come to a live event. It's why you go to trade shows. It's why you do those things. So you're bang on. It's really, really important you incorporate networking, because that's one of the key drivers of why you go to particular events.
Yeah, and I've seen it where it is a speed dating thing. It's part of the platform.
The group that I'm working with is not using Zoom, so they have this networking platform. But yesterday I did it with a Zoom webinar where they ran kind of like breakout rooms after. So as soon as you were done your meeting, you clicked in another Zoom link for your specialty. So I chose HR and marketing. And it was a smaller group of people, all live like this. But the webinar was a typical webinar. You know, participants aren't talking, they're just using a chat room. So I think that idea of kind of blending the two, I think that's one of the ways you can have sort of face-to-face interactions, Carol. It's not going to be direct leads right away. But you know what? People are helping people right now, and they're building friendships. And those things we all know are really important. It all comes back to you. So,
okay. Thank you.
I would just recommend to research a webinar or whatever event you attend prior very well, because I was presenting at a conference which was supposed to be in Vegas this week physically, but they moved online. It was 2 days and they used Hopin platform, a lot of technical issues, but the networker part looked like only the presenters were networking with each other. I mean, nothing wrong with this as well. I'm just saying it worthwhile to invest first to see if it's even your potentially people that you would like to connect with, right? So just do your homework, right?
I'm sure everybody's doing this, but what Maureen, you said is spot on for us as well. We're kind of taking a tree approach where you have a main subject and then we have areas of interest. The breakout sessions are areas of interest that people are. And then we have them register for those. We record the main session itself. We post that, of course. And then people have to log in to, because some people can't make that session, but they will log in to view it. And you're garnering that information on who's taken an extra time to see it. Or maybe they were on it and they want to hear it again. Or then they log into the area of interest. So, but it's always that user login information. It's a great way to garner people who are interested, and you start communicating and networking and trickle feeding them more information along the way. You ask them, come across something that's important, an article that references this section, would you be interested in receiving it? And we're getting some pretty good uptick in activity and traffic and general true interest that's turning into some pretty deep dive discussions. So. Okay. Again, we get back to the whole remote thing. We'd rather have a face-to-face as Chris was alluding to earlier, because it is still, pressing the flesh is still important when you're getting to the contract signing. People want to, read the veins in your neck when the stress is on. But these ideas are great. It'd be good if we could kind of summarize them somehow, Ryan, and publish it on Tech Connect with, tips and techniques that people are using for generating new business in the new millennium.
Barry, can I, we talked about, perhaps looking through the summer months, not having sessions, but there's a lot of excellent topics right now. And one of the things that I know Ryan and Kelly and I have talked about is while we traditionally take a little bit of a pause during the summer, we're looking at trying to run some sessions, but now, I'm kind of hearing right now there's a number of topics that I think would be excellent for the whole CEO peer group around things such as Maureen's talked about, managing in the new world, as we're all talking about right now, tools for, sort of new tools for business development, acquiring and raising capital. So I think perhaps what we'll look at doing, I'll get a chance to talk to Ryan and about the CEO peer group and Barry yourself, perhaps we run some sessions through the summer and cover off specifically, spend a session on topics like managing in the new world, topics such as specifically, what people are doing and how they're utilizing new business development tools in the era that we're in right now. So let's kind of work on that. Okay.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear what's happening in the HR side of things and the new, how our best practices changing when you're dealing with remote workforce.
So as I mentioned, I'm going to share this Williams HR Law link for you. They're going to build, they've got a COVID resource center. It's all free. They did 4 hours on the legal issues. on everything you can think of. I mean, how to manage people that come back to you and say, I can't come back to the office, even though you're going back because I have kids that don't have a daycare. And all of the implications of that. So if you've got someone on your team who's managing those issues, this will be a great resource. It's not posted quite yet. The second session ended yesterday. So I'll definitely get that to Ryan. If any of you have ideas or have been doing interesting things to support your managers and managing your people during this time, if you're available next Tuesday morning, we're doing the group session. And lastly, can I do a personal plug? I'm running a session and it's going to be posted on Tech Connects. This is for your teams. So if you have a group of people in your office and you want to sort of connect with them, it is going to be ergonomics for the home office and all about, you know, managing your body and tension and pain in your work from home modified office. I've brought in a chiropractor and a physiotherapist, and this is just about another way to put your employees together on a call. So it's Monday, June 22nd over the lunch hour. It's not meant for management. It's not discussion that way. It's meant for your team and maybe yourself if you're dealing with an interesting home office. This is all about just trying to get the concept of, you know what, there's more to just moving home and working from home and saying I've got connectivity. So if Kelly's going to post it on the calendar, you can register through Tech Connects, but I'm really, these two founders, they're small startup companies, this chiropractor and physiotherapist, really love to showcase them because they've done some brilliant stuff about moving virtually, but this is going to be a self-help type of session. It's going to be all about stretching and setting up your office and different ways that you can eliminate the stress on your body. So,
yeah. Cool.
Thanks, Maureen. Barry, it's 10 o'clock.
I
obviously want to thank you for another great year of facilitation, and thank you all for attending the CEO session. A lot of people have already dropped off, but just once again, thank you, everybody. This was our best year ever for attendance. So thank you all. John and I, and Barry, we will talk about running some stuff, because I got a lot of private chat stuff. There's more people want to talk about BDC, see what's going on with that. So we may have some one-offs there. Just a couple of side notes. I think everybody saw the Ontario government pledge $150 million to SWIFT. That could mean two things. School's not going to be back in session in September. My wife's a teacher, so they're not sure exactly what that means, or if they're already planning out a hybrid version of what the school year is already going to look like. So it could be 3 days in, 2 days off. But I know that the rural areas have been hit really hard with that not being able to do online learning. And then StatsCan, I think, just posted that Ontario or Canada just had jobs. So 290,000 jobs were created in May.
The stock market's way up.
Yeah, so we'll start.
I would suggest you, Ryan, on education. There's no way September 1st is business as usual, and you've got a lot of other factors such as daycares. If daycares aren't going, then education, and also, you know, a classroom is no different than an office on social distancing, etc. So. The other thing is kids will be carriers, just like they bring everything home to parents and grandparents.
Oh, yeah.
Well, although COVID, because they don't have the comorbidities, they don't have the same impact from a health perspective, they will be big carriers. So the government is aware of that. And I think they're trying to just gradually get people used to the fact that it's not going back. And in fact, BC and Quebec, it's just a dry run for September. And they found a vast majority didn't want to go back, particularly in BC. So it's not going to be business as usual come September. It just isn't. And that's going to continue for an awful long time. So they've got the same issues like anywhere else where you get people gathered together, be it for social or business or education. It's just not going to be the same kind September 1st.
Yeah.
Len, you had your hand up. Len, you had your hand up there.
Yes.
I really agree with Barry. We have grandchildren in Markham, and also we have friends with grandchildren in Toronto. The differences between different school board using technology and being able to help the teacher to interact more effectively with the student is quite interesting from a technology point of view. And I agree, e-learning from the Ontario Ministry of Education is the goal, but the training and the whole infrastructure and also the process is gonna be a real challenge for them to even think that they're gonna have a smooth startup in September, right?
The other thing too is there's the inequality of children of what access do they have to technology at home. And so there's a real have and have nots, or I'm up at a cottage right now and I can't use the satellite for video, it's too slow. And that's the only service they have in this area, for instance. So there's a big issue, not only in how you teach, but also the equipment and the necessity for equipment at home. And a big inequality both on internet or bandwidth across the country, as well as the accessibility to the right equipment, if you will, for it to be successful. So
yeah.
Big issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think learning styles. Right, Ryan?
We were both talking at the same time.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, my wife has, there could be 3 to 4 students in one house and one device. The other thing is all the stuff that they have in the schools hasn't been doled out. So there's mm-hmm. Chromebooks. I know there's probably a couple of hundred Chromebooks in my wife's school. They're all sitting there. And the school iPads are sitting there not being used. And that the problem is, in fact, like stuff being carried over, electronics and things being shared, passed around, coming back, people taking the time to sanitize, also security. I agree with John. It's an uphill battle. I think it's going to take a long time for everybody to be on status quo. And I don't know if $150 million is even going to even do much of anything. No. It's billions of dollars of infrastructure, and Barry could talk about the telecom, and John could too. I think it's a good start, but there's a lot of other.
Well, you know what? This may revive the world of broadband video, because a lot of the universities and states are looking at securing defunct channels that haven't been used for years, and using those as providing education over your baseband TV channels, and those students being able to call in on traditional telephone lines, which everybody has. So, the whole world of, as John said, the whole world of education and distribution of knowledge is going, and we're going to see very different flavors, different hybrids based on regional localities and geography. So, I'm glad there are people much smarter than me trying to figure this out, and we'll see what they come up with. But all we need is a vaccine. All we need is a vaccine. That's it.
Hey, everybody, have a great weekend.
Okay. Thanks everybody.
Guys.
Thank you.
Hydroxychloroquine, John.
I think bleach
or
is
Clorox.
Just fine.
Clorox, Maureen. Clorox.
Exactly.
Sounds great. Bye-bye.
That's what we're on. Bye.
Guys. Have a great one. Thank you.
Bye.
See you.